The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. House Democrats continue their quest to take down the duly elected President Donald Trump.
Washington behavior never improves. You set a lower bar and then the race gets on to go even lower than that.
But the president isn't the only individual who stands to lose in this process.
You said the whistleblower took a shot at Donald Trump, and he hit the Bidens.
We'll examine what really led to this mess.
He was buying access and influence to the Biden family.
And we'll look at the whistleblower.
The information alleged was all secondhand. It was variations of gossip, rumor, hearsay, and various news articles.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning, live, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and let me invite you to join me now by video. And follow me on Twitter, please, at Hugh Hewitt. Democrats continued their march towards impeachment this week, dodging the facts like a stumbling quarterback in a collapsed pocket. But when you have full control of the House and a great majority of elite media behind you, you control messaging. And their message to the public was clear. Trump was guilty of a quid pro quo. Formal charges to be drawn up sometime down the road. And the impeachment chatter then went into full swing, led by the wide-eyed Congressman Adam Schiff, the Kramer. Remember Kramer from Seinfeld? He's the Kramer congressman. He got some careful and calculated assist from Speaker Nancy Pelosi, though. In today's Town Hall Review, we unpack the players and the facts and lay them out in plain sight. We start with Kimberly Strassel, columnist for the Wall Street Journal, author of the powerful new book, Resistance at All Costs. How Trump haters are breaking America. It's difficult to imagine a more perfectly timed book. Strassel joined my friend and colleague, Dennis Prager.
So what's your read on the latest hysteria?
Well, I think what we're seeing in a way is a repeat of what we just went through for 2 or 3 years with Bob Mueller. A different package, a different delivery method, this time a whistleblower complaint, but the same overhyped reaction to it, and it looks as though Democrats, again, are the party that are in search of a crime, just anything in order to take out Donald Trump. And I do think it's doing great damage to our body politic and politics.
Yes, because what we're hearing is if you don't like an election result, you can resort to undoing the election result. That's how people like you and I read it.
Well, and I've been thinking a lot about this lately, that I wonder if the left understands the precedent that they are setting here for a future Democratic president. Because we will have one in the future, and we'll have one in which there's a Democratic president and a Republican House. And do we really want an environment in which an unknown member of the intelligence community who is hostile to that Democrat's policy agenda or time in office can, with such ease as the ease we just saw, bring us to the brink of impeachment? It's concerning. There are so many of those norms that have been broken, and they will be applied in the future.
Just like Harry Reid broke the norm on filibuster, and then the Republicans one-upped him with regard to Supreme Court judges. They don't realize that what they do can be done to them.
Right. It's very here and now thinking. It's not thinking about the future or the good of the country. And you're right. I think one big lesson I have always taken away from Washington since the many, many years ago that I started this is that Washington behavior never improves. you set a lower bar, and then the race gets on to go even lower than that. And we are wading into dangerous territory here.
Do you think there are any Democrats in the House who think my party is going crazy?
I think that there are, but the problem is they're not willing to say so. You know, I was laughing the other day. I read a piece, I think it was in The Atlantic, and the reporter was bemoaning the fact that there were no Republicans that would come out and on the record and berate Donald Trump for his behavior. And it just went to show that everyone was scared of Donald Trump. And I laughed because all I could think is, really? Because that is honestly a better description of the left. Why are we having this impeachment thing? If you think about this, Dennis, it's mesmerizing. Of all of the things that the Democrats have put out there over the last couple of years, Russia collusion, obstruction of justice, Trump's taxes, Stormy Daniels, they managed to seize on and move to the brink of impeachment on the one issue that actually also implicates their front runner for the Democratic nomination, Joe Biden. And they do it before they've even seen the transcript or seen the whistleblower complaint. Now, why would you do that? They did it because the activist left pushed them all to finally go toward impeachment. So they chose a terrible issue, but they're being driven by the left wing of their party that is not only forcing them into actions like this, but I think making it hard for those who disagree to speak out for fear of a primary challenge or fear of a Twitter mob.
We have far more, we may not have many, but I mean, we have a Mitt Romney. Where is the Democrat who is speaking against them, against their left, like Mitt Romney speaks against the president?
Well, there isn't. And look, our side, too. I think that the reaction to this entire Ukrainian thing has been very much in line with the divergence of thought that you always see on the conservative side. Look, I'm happy to say this. Do I wish that the president had not necessarily gone after Joe Biden in a call with a foreign leader? Sure. Does this in any way rise to an impeachable offense? No. So, I mean, I'm happy to kind of make
that's those exactly decisions. My position. I've said that on the air. Exactly. Do you think that things would be different if just imagine for a moment, let's say Mike Pence were president?
I think it would be different in a certain way. I mean, remember that Republicans are always the target of the media, always subject to harsher criticism than Democratic presidents get. So you have to have that as a base point. But there is something about this president that just drives his critics absolutely insane. And I don't tend to use this word all the time, but there, I think Trump derangement syndrome is a real phenomenon.
I think a big part of it, aside from the hatred, that is not only that he defeated Hillary Clinton, but his style, that this is sort of a class issue. He represents the hoi polloi. He represents, he's like the deplorables. I know that, as I said before you were on, in New York, San Francisco, and Boston and Washington, The elites have deep contempt for people in Nebraska. And he represents, though he's a New Yorker, people in Nebraska. You think there's truth to that?
I think it's absolutely true. And don't forget, it isn't just that Trump beat Hillary Clinton. The rage is also over the stakes, remember?
Right. Well, that's why I asked about
the continuation of the Obama
that's
agenda.
Right.
And the cementing of it.
Outside of extraordinary circumstances, impeaching the President of the United States should be a last resort. In this case, it was plan one on day one of the Democratic House, a verdict in search of a crime. I've been around the law and politics and impeachment-related matters for a few decades now. So Sebastian Gorka invited me on his syndicated radio show.
You had one summary, and I want you to expand on it because I thought it was so on the money. You said the whistleblower took a shot at Donald Trump and he hit the Bidens. Would you care to expand?
Yes, because in the whistleblower call, the president and the newly elected president of Ukraine talk about Joe Biden, until that moment, until the transcript was released, I was unaware of Joe Biden's bragging to the Council on Foreign Relations that he had obliged the Ukrainian governor, the Ukrainian president, to fire the prosecutor in Ukraine. And until that whistleblower transcript was posted, I did not know the rough transcript of the call. I did not know that Hunter Biden had received $3 million or more dollars from a Ukrainian gas and oil company. I was totally did not know. Didn't actually know much about Hunter Biden. I tend not to care much about the children of presidents. I generally consider them off limit. But I really had no knowledge of Hunter Biden, no interest in discussing what is a rather checkered past. But to discover that he had been paid $3 million over the same period that his father was vice president, and that his father intervened to fire a Ukrainian official that is in some accounts said to be investigating the company that Hunter Biden served on the board of, is itself the appearance of impropriety as recognized. I have subsequently, because of this whistleblower, went back and read a New Yorker article, which I had not read, which lays out in grimace-inducing detail the very sad side of Hunter Biden's life. But one side of his life, which isn't sad, it's simply egregious, is the exploiting of his father's position as vice president to become, if not wealthy, then well compensated. Apparently he has some large debts. I can't tell from the article. And so when they set out to expose Donald Trump for an innocuous, and I believe ultimately risible complaint,
yes,
about his conversation with the Ukrainian president, lodged by people who have evidently never heard presidents talk about or with foreign leaders, as I have and as you have, then my attention drove in. And if they move forward with impeachment, and I don't know if you agree with me, Seb, I want them to hold the vote today.
Yes.
Establish a select committee. I want to get everyone on the record. I want to get the witnesses up there. I want to get it done right now.
And okay, so here I have to ask the question. You have very good connections. You walk on the other side. You're on the shows. Nancy knows she doesn't have the numbers. She knows there are 30 Democrats in districts that Donald Trump won. She knows she cannot get a supermajority in the Senate. And she knows if it goes to the Senate, we can subpoena, the right can subpoena anybody we want, including Hunter Biden. Is this just a circus, Hugh Hewitt?
Yes, it is. I think it's a sideshow. I do not believe there will ever be a vote on articles of impeachment.
Is this going to actually be good for Donald Trump and those who subscribe to the MAGA agenda?
I believe so. I think the president ought to call for an immediate vote on the establishment of a select committee. I think Kevin McCarthy should vote for the establishment of a select committee. And I believe that they ought to move as quickly as possible to get articles on the floor and voted and over to the Senate if Democrats are dumb enough to do it, because the American people know a fraud when they see it. This is a fraud.
Coming up,
he was buying access and influence to the Biden family.
Senator Tom Cotton, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Democrats seized on Trump's conversation with the president of Ukraine, seeing it as a vehicle to get the public behind impeachment. But there was collateral damage to the campaign of the leading Democratic candidate for the president right now, Joe Biden, at particular risk and an enormous liability to his father, is the generous monthly paycheck Ukraine's gas company was sending to Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. I discussed this melee with the Arkansas Senator, Tom Cotton. Any investigation of the Ukraine has to begin with Hunter Biden. That Hunter Biden is a key issue here that everyone doesn't want to deal with. That's a direct quote. Do you agree with Senator Lankford about Hunter Biden?
Yes, Hugh. And let's take stock about the situation with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Hunter Biden was hired by a Ukrainian oligarch for $50,000 a month at a time when he was a known alcoholic and drug addict. who had no experience whatsoever in Ukraine or in the oil and gas industry. What do we think that oligarch believed he was buying? He was buying access and influence to the Biden family. And sure enough, there's Vice President Joe Biden on camera bragging and boasting about how he flew into Kiev and got all chesty and told Poroshenko, the president at the time, to fire the prosecutor investigating Hunter Biden's patron. And lo and behold, threatening to withhold $1 billion of U.S. aid from Ukraine if they didn't fire the prosecutor who was investigating Hunter Biden's patron. Now, maybe there's nothing there, Hugh. Maybe everything's on the up and up. But surely the American people deserve to know what exactly happened and that that investigation itself was not tainted by corruption.
Now, you're asking the right question, in my view, as a lawyer, which is, what was the motive of the oligarch who hired Hunter Biden? Now, I want to thank the whistleblower. I had never heard of this contract or of Joe Biden's threat until after the whistleblower brought it to our attention. And so it blew up in their hands. These really are the Wile E. Coyote Democrats, Senator Cotton. Everything they try against Donald Trump blows up in their hands. But I am now focused on this contract. It's a hell of a rehabilitation program. I wish Hunter Biden nothing but recovery. But if we could pay everyone who's in rehab $50,000 a month to do, I think, nothing, that might help them readjust.
The main thing he was being paid $50,000 a month to do was be the vice president of the United States' son.
And I want to go back to what this Ukrainian boss thought he was getting, because I want the people to understand, Hunter Biden might not have even shown up. But if the corrupt oligarch is walking around the Ukraine saying, Hunter Biden is on my board, how do people react to that? Senator Cotton, we know, but explain to the people how corruption actually works without Hunter Biden having to say a word.
So your painting was probably the best case scenario, Hugh. And I think most of your listeners know that even in America, where we have the gold standards of the rule of law and anti-corruption investigations and practices, a lot of people would think that that means access and influence with the vice president. Ukraine is not America. Ukraine has many troubles, and they are divided by rival factions that point the fingers at each other and try to win and gain and preserve influence with patrons, not only in Ukraine, but around the world. And of course, there's no greater partner to have than the United States government in a place like Ukraine.
Lindsey Graham doesn't want to have a hearing on this. He wants John Durham, the attorney general, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to investigate the Bidens. I want a hearing. What does Tom Cotton want?
I understand Senator Graham's point that the Department of Justice has the most investigative tools at their disposal. They're trained professionals, and that Bill Barr, the attorney general, has appointed Mr. Durham to investigate some of these matters emerging out of misconduct that led to the Russia hoax. But at some point, if there's going to be hearings in Congress about President Trump conducting a routine diplomatic phone call, then we need to look at what kicked all this off, which is Hunter Biden's activities in Ukraine, which, by the way, just scratches the surface of what Hunter Biden has done, or for that matter, Joe Biden's brother, James Biden.
You can listen to my entire conversation with Senator Cotton at townhallreview.com. Another development in this impeachment mess are the rules surrounding a whistleblower. There was a sudden and quiet change that seems to have come at a rather opportune time. Salem host Sebastian Gorka discussed the controversy with Federalist co-founder Sean Davis.
The complaint arises out of a confidential diplomatic communication between the president and a foreign leader that the intelligence community complainant received secondhand. Isn't that the key? How is that not the main way that this story is being reported, Sean?
Well, it's interesting. Earlier this month, both the Director of National Intelligence General Counsel and the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel looked at this particular complaint from the anti-Trump leaker and said it was statutorily deficient, that it did not meet the statutory requirements of a so-called urgent concern complaint, which requires transmittal to the relevant congressional committees within 14 days. And both DNI and DOJ looked at this complaint and said, you know what, it doesn't deal with an intelligence activity because it was a diplomatic communication between elected world leaders. It didn't have anything to do with the intelligence community because the president of the United States is a superior constitutional elected officer, the intelligence community serves him, not vice versa.
Right.
And then third, the information alleged was all secondhand. It was variations of gossip, rumor, hearsay, and various news articles. And it was the ICIG who, on his own, decided to transmit it to Congress. And it raises a whole bunch of questions, especially in light of this secret revision to the rules requiring firsthand evidence, raises a whole bunch of questions about what was actually going on within the IC, within this cabal in the White House, and within staff of the House Intel Committee run by Adam Schiff. And when you put all this together, it certainly looks as if though there is a very coordinated effort to orchestrate this entire complaint from the very beginning.
So at the end of the day, this just looks like an end run around the constitutional and legal requirements for whistleblowing. And the timing, explain the timing for us. So this form that required firsthand knowledge of something untoward happening was changed to secondhand just weeks or even days before this complaint was made public?
Potentially. We don't know the exact date that these revisions were made. We know that as of May 24th, 2018, that if you emailed the Intelligence Community Inspector General and said, I have a complaint, it's an urgent concern, they would email you the form that had its own heading in bold and in caps, firsthand information required. And at some point between then and August 2019, that provision was eliminated. And when I asked the DNI and the ICIG questions about this, they refused to answer them.
Do you expect to be rebuffed, or will there be an answer coming out of the IC, Sean Davis?
Well, I certainly expect to be rebuffed. It was interesting. When I asked them questions, I asked them only questions about this particular form, why it was changed, when it was changed. And the response I got was, well, we are not going to comment on anything having to do with the latest whistleblower, which was a really odd response because I didn't ask.
You didn't mention the whistleblower.
But thankfully, members in Congress on both sides, both the House and the Senate, who are actually interested in oversight of the intelligence community, sent letters today demanding answers about these secret revisions, why they were made, who made them, when they made them, and hopefully they will be able to get some answers from the community that, in theory, is supposed to report to them.
Coming up, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich weighs in on the impeachment effort.
These are deadly serious people, but they're not responsible.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Hey, thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. The effort on the part of Democrats to discredit President Trump started before his inauguration, and it has never let up. Even as one of their plots falls apart in their hands, they start another one. Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich is a veteran of complicated politics, having served in the role of Speaker of the House during the impeachment of President Bill Clinton. He spoke with Mike Gallagher.
They must be terrified that Bill Barr, the Trump administration, is about to uncover some really serious stuff. They know the Trump administration is getting close, so they're throwing everything they can at this guy to stop him in his tracks.
What's fascinating is if you go back and look, there's an article on January 20th, the day that Donald Trump took the oath of office and gave his inaugural address. The Washington Post that morning had an article entitled, "The Campaign to Impeach President Trump Has Begun." And of course, it began at 10 o'clock on election night when the left suddenly realized that Hillary had lost.
He won. Yeah, he actually
and
won.
That this guy who was totally unacceptable was going to be the president of the United States. And from that minute on, there were people in the left saying, "We got to get rid of it. You know, we can't wait for the next election." And, of course, I'm terrified if he gets a couple of more judicial appointments, he will have changed the judiciary from liberal to conservative for maybe the next 30 to 40 years. he's the beginning of the end of their world.
Right, right. And he's getting close to really, really rocking their world. And that's the thing that, I mean, when you've got Bill Barr, who is now trying to understand and find out the possible misconduct by the intelligence community at the outset of the Russia investigation. Hey, Newt, I thought they were all about stopping meddling and foreign interference in our election.
They want foreign interference if it helps them.
Right.
I think part of what they're really worried about is that the U.S. attorney who was assigned to look into this is talking to Australia. He's talking to Italy. He's talking to Ukraine. And they're apparently putting together a real case that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats were systematically involved with foreigners in trying to defeat Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of why you have this whole sudden dramatic pressure, because I think at one level, they're just panic-stricken. I think the other part of it is that AOC has become the spiritual Speaker of the House, and Nancy Pelosi is now only the symbolic spirit Speaker of the House. And so you have this very young, very aggressive, stunningly ignorant radical group who are out here tromping across the Constitution and determined to cause radical change no matter what. And I think that's a big piece of what's going on.
You, Newt, the contrasts, the competing voices with the Democrat Party, let's face it, they're a mess.
Well, and you've got, Adam Smith, I think, is as despicable as any chairman in modern times, opening a hearing on impeachment by reading two paragraphs that he said Donald Trump had said. And it turned out those two paragraphs had been written by Schiff.
Yeah, he made it up.
Were totally false.
I mean, this is
and
not...
Here he is as chairman opening the hearing with this kind of total nonsense.
These are not serious people, Newt, and that's what's so frustrating, because I'm watching unserious people.
No, I want to distinguish. What's frightening is these are deadly serious people, but they're not responsible.
Mm-hmm.
These
mm-hmm.
aren't people who care about the Constitution. These are not people who care about the rule of law, but they are deadly serious. And if they can get power over you and drive you off the air because you're a conservative, they're going to do it.
Right.
If they can get power over all of us and seize our guns, as one of their nominee candidates for president has said, they're going to do it. I mean, we should understand these are deadly serious people.
And
it's just unfortunately that they have no respect for the Constitution, no respect for the things that have made America great, and no respect for their fellow citizens.
And to anybody listening to our conversation anywhere in the world right now who doubts what Speaker Gingrich just said, I was incredulous watching a U.S. senator and presidential candidate who, and for many people think is a shining star, Kamala Harris, literally call for the president's Twitter account to be suspended. She's calling now on Twitter to take down Trump's Twitter account. You don't think they're trying to silence him?
Well, of course they are. I mean, look, to President Trump's credit, as one of the greatest marketers ever to occupy the White House, he now has a larger following on social media than all of the networks combined.
Right.
And that's why he's been able to withstand three constant years of warfare, because he can actually slug it out with them.
Right.
with relative parity. And they're now so bad at being fake news. You know, you have a fake whistleblower filing a fake report picked up by the fake news and then used by the fake chairman Schiff to support the fake Speaker of the House in a fake impeachment process.
Coming up.
Bourgeois values are not exclusive, they're inclusive. They're the secret sauce to how to get ahead in America.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. There have been a cluster of timely books of late, many of them dealing with the disturbing climate in politics. As the divisions in the nation grow sharper, civil discussions are more rare. Two sides shout to their base, but the strife runs well beyond politics. Howard Husok, Vice President for Policy Research at Manhattan Institute, wrote another one of those timely books, this one titled Who Killed Civil Society? He joined Salem host Dennis Prager.
What prompted you to write this?
Well, it goes back to a personal story, and it's a story of my father's upbringing. The biggest mystery of my childhood was how my father had survived his. He was orphaned at age 10 in the depths of the Depression in South Philadelphia, which was a very, very poor neighborhood. I said, well, how'd you get by? He was homeless for a while with his sister. He said, well, it was the agency. I go, what the heck was the agency? And then some years later, I started poking around in archives in Philadelphia before there was an internet, and I found out that he had been placed in foster care, not by the government, because the government didn't do that then, but something called the Juvenile Aid Society, Jewish Philanthropy in Philadelphia. Not only did they place him in a foster home that they knew was going to be a good home, but they checked up on him every week. A volunteer would come and meet with him, and not only did she make sure that he had a place to do his homework and had his own room and he was getting fed well, but she had a list of values that the agency told her she had to share with him. Values like self-control, self-discipline, good manners. And I said, wow, why do these sound old-fashioned and sound like something that we wouldn't dare to promote today, that social workers today would back away from? And then I said, well, how did that change? And that led me to a story of how the government took over that whole independent sector of values promoting civil society. And that led me to write the book.
That's very powerful. You know, I actually almost welled up in tears that there was an America where a kid was given a written set of values to live by. When I hear the phrase, make America great again, that's what I think about. Raising kids with character values. Your father's story is another, there's another thing. You must bristle at the phrase that poverty causes crime.
Well, values prevent crime. That's the thing. It's like gun control is going to prevent gun violence. Well, how do we get people not to pick up guns in the first place? And that's what civil society used to be about. What I like to say about civil society, and I think you'll like this, people say, what is civil society? Some kind of arcane phrase. It's very simple. It's everything that is illegal in China. Independent religious institutions, forget about it. Independent anything, the Falun Gong, just because they're independent of the government, it's illegal in China. And we had the most robust system of civil society in this country until government started to give grants to all these organizations. And suddenly their values were distorted away from what I call the formative to the reformative. We're going to help people once they have problems, as opposed to having civil society groups, churches, synagogues, and secular groups of all kinds inculcate, if you will, the right values.
It's so nice to hear. That's the solution. That's what the Tocqueville said was America's strength. These non-governmental agencies, which the left has destroyed one after another because they're independent of the state. I know that you are aware of the Amy Wax controversy. She used the word bourgeois, the term bourgeois norms. Why don't you tell everybody, in a nutshell, what happened there and your take on it?
Well, Amy Wax at the University of Pennsylvania wrote an article for a local newspaper there saying there are some cultures and cultural norms that are to be preferred to others. And the ones that she extolled particularly were the so-called bourgeois norms. And you can think of that as sobriety, thrift, marriage. Some people talk about the success sequence. Finish school, don't have children until you're married, and keep a job, almost any job. I think the thing that people really get wrong, and Amy didn't get it wrong, her critics got it wrong, what people really get wrong is to think of bourgeois values. It's like folk Marxism. Marx criticized the bourgeoisie, so they must be bad guys. There's a sense that it's exclusive, that it's for the privileged, for the well-to-do, the bourgeoisie. No, throughout American history, civil society, and I happen to love the settlement houses of the early 20th century that were teaching immigrants English and teaching them how to become citizens, teaching them the Pledge of Allegiance. That's where it started. And what they understood was bourgeois values are not exclusive, they're inclusive. They're the secret sauce to how to get ahead in America. They're the secret sauce to life satisfaction. It was the privileged classes, if you will, the well-to-do, sharing with the newcomers who came from rural areas and from unsophisticated backgrounds. This is the way to succeed, America. And we're telling you this, why? Because we want you to succeed. We don't want to oppress you. We want you to succeed. And so it's a misunderstanding that Amy got caught in to think that these are some kind of exclusive values of the upper crust. Not at all.
Yeah. Well, you're generous. I don't believe it's misunderstanding. I think it's deliberate misreading by the left. They completely understand. How could the idea that you should have a child after you get married be racist? Unless you're a racist and think that this is directed against minorities, racial minorities, which makes you the racist. In other words, whites should have children after marrying, but we should not say that blacks should have children after marrying. Isn't that, that's exclusivity. That's not inclusive. So I just have to say, I don't think they misunderstand it at all. I think they are a force of chaos, but that doesn't matter.
It's a condescension and a patronization, you know, and in the old days, if you will, when civil society was healthier and more far reaching, there was an understanding that no, these are values that are good for everybody.
To hear the full interview, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up.
A black sixth grader says that she was pinned down by white classmates who mocked her and cut her hair.
A big story turns out to be just another hoax. Details in the final segment of Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt.
If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day.
This week, while House Democrats bang the drum on impeachment, they may have their eyes on the inquiry of Attorney General William Barr.
There are clearly a great number of people who are very determined to try to discredit these findings before they come out.
We'll take a closer look at impeachment itself, as intended.
America's founders did not provide for impeachment as a partisan political weapon.
We'll also look at the plight of Christians in Nigeria.
Nigeria really is on the verge of collapse.
And a school teacher makes a gracious effort to accommodate a transgendered student, but loses his job.
Nobody should be forced to contradict their core beliefs just to keep their job.
Be sure to join us. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Racial attacks of any sort are very real and very serious. But of late, far too often, the media jumps on a story that turns out to be, well, a pure hoax. Jussie Smollett, the actor accused of staging his own attack, has become the poster child for such antics. And now the trend is filtered down onto the playground of a grade school. Here's Salem host Larry Elder.
There was a literal frenzy when a 12-year-old black girl claimed that she was attacked during recess at her private Christian school, and three white boys cut off her dreadlocks. Springfield, Illinois. And here, before there was a plot twist, is how the media covered it.
A disturbing story tonight involving a school outside Washington, D.C.
Police in Northern Virginia are investigating after a 12-year-old African-American girl said three white classmates pinned her down and cut her dreadlocks.
A 12-year-old Virginia girl says she is traumatized.
She was pinned down by white classmates who cut her hair.
Her white classmates pinned her down and cut her dreadlocks.
Her classmates called her hair ugly and nappy.
Today, the girl and her family told us about what they're calling a racist attack.
Hey, the girl says she's been bullied by the same boys before.
But it's very disturbing about these boys because it's heartbreaking and traumatizing for that little girl.
The wife of the vice president, Mike Pence, she teaches there.
Karen Pence teaches.
By the way, did you notice that? Karen Pence part-time teaches there, which is one of the reasons the left-wing media went crazy on this story.
Second Lady Karen Pence teaches art part-time there.
Incidents like this, they're not isolated. They're happening way too often.
CBS News headline, girl admits to lying about sixth grade classmates cutting off her dreadlocks. Associated Press, girl who claimed white classmates cut her dreadlocks admits she made the story up. It didn't happen. But you see, the media ran with it because, like Beto O'Rourke, they think America is a racist country.
This is a violent country that loses more than 40,000 of our fellow Americans every year to gun violence. And this is a country that has been defined by foundational, systemic, endemic racism since the very founding of this country, August 20th of 1619, the first time that a kidnapped African was brought here against his will.
Kidnapped African? Beto O'Rourke, they weren't kidnapped. They were sold by African chieftains after conquest and war. Notice one of the newsies said, this is happening far too often. Remember the guy I interviewed, Wilfred Riley? Teaches at a historically black college. Wrote a book called Hate Crime Hoax, How the Left is Selling a Fake Race War. He says his research revealed 509 confirmed falsified hate crimes in the past 5 years. And since he published his book, he says the number has grown to more than 600. Fake. Didn't happen. That didn't stop the media from going nuts, though, did it? Of course not.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.